Welcome to Breaking Banks, the number one global fintech radio show and podcast. I'm Brett King.
And I'm Jason Henricks. Every week since 2013, we explore the personalities, startups, innovators, and industry players driving disruption in financial services.
From incumbents to unicorns, and from cutting-edge technology to the people using it to help create a more innovative, inclusive, and healthy financial future. I'm JP Nichols, and this is Breaking Banks. This episode of Breaking Banks is supported by Banking Circle, the financial infrastructure provider you can bank on.
Hi, I'm Brett King, and you are joining us on a very, very special Provoke Family podcast gathering. We have joining us from all around the world the hosts and the talent that represent the seven different podcasts as part of the Provoke Media family. We have Matteo Rizzi joining us from, I guess, where are you in Lisbon, Matteo?
In Estoril, yes, Lisbon.
Excellent, excellent. JP Nichols in sunny Seattle.
Yeah, not so sunny today, but I'm here.
Yep. We have Dara Tarkowski, and you're holed up in exile from your family in Miami. Is that right?
I was in Miami, but now I'm holed up in exile in Chicago.
Oh, in Chicago. Okay, great. Jason Henricks, where are you today, Jason?
Oh, definitely hold up. Minnesota's about 9 degrees right now, so I need to change my backdrop to the crackling fire or something of the sort.
Yeah, that would look nice, yeah. Greg Palmer, the host of the Finovate, the official Finovate podcast. Welcome on our family gathering today.
Thanks, Brett.
And the newest member of our family, Jen Tesha with Merge Everywhere. Jen.
Hi, everybody. Dara, I am also in Chicago. Too bad we couldn't find some socially distanced way to do this together.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just got to get through some quarantine period.
So it's been a pretty big year, guys. I think it's a year we'll remember for the rest of our lives, this year of lockdown and COVID and challenges and so forth. But let me just ask you, first of all, how are you guys doing? You know, and how has it been as a year for you? What changes have you had to make, and how have you coped with this individually and personally? Maybe we'll start off with the ladies. Dara, you want to jump in?
Well, sure. So this year has been so interesting. I remember at the beginning of the year when all of this started happening, I was actually in Berlin at Finovate Europe with Greg sitting.
The last one, we got it in under the wire.
We got it right in. And I remember at that conference, us all running around being like, what's happening? Between hurricane force winds in the UK, preventing people from getting in, and, you know, the whole world starting to shut down. That was, I think, the last time that I was, with so many, of our colleagues, realizing that things were changing, right, considerably. And then getting back and not really knowing how long all of this was going to last. What I noticed for myself personally is, it was sort of a pleasant way to slow myself down and spend a lot of time with my kids. But on the flip side, work was absolutely crazy and exploding, particularly from a regulatory standpoint, with everything changing in financial services to respond to the pandemic so rapidly. People were like rapid dialing lawyers on, very, very urgently. So from a work perspective, I don't know that I've ever been busier, honestly, in my whole career. But by the same token, also sort of having the blessing of spending a lot of time with my family that I didn't used to get to do as much when I was a road warrior.
I think, Jason, you'd appreciate that, and Jen too, with the kids running around. How have you coexisted with the kids in the COVID shutdown?
Go ahead, Jason. You've got it tougher than me.
Oh, man.
Your kids are younger.
Tell you what, one of the fun things is, so the rule I had with my wife was, when not traveling, I play primary parent, which is all well and good until travel grinds to a halt, right? And she refuses to recast the deal. She's like, a deal is a deal is a deal, right? But it is at least normalized, you know, the number of interactions that I'll have with a four-year-old on my lap, or you'll hear Llama Llama playing in the background. In fact, CEO of one of our investments, Aurum, she and I regularly schedule our meetings with our four-year-olds who like interact with each other, because it's like going to have to be disturbed sometimes. So we might as well do it now. And I'd say, you know, maybe the most impactful thing to me is I hadn't realized how much American Airlines cared about me, but now they call repeatedly to see if I'm okay, which tells me we need to reassess our travel policies.
Yeah, I can't say I've missed the travel. You know, I traveled pretty regularly pre-COVID, and I'd like to travel again. I think COVID has demonstrated just how much can be done virtually. And you can't replace the relationship building that happens when you're in person, but not only for our own individual sanity and the good of our families, I think it's also good for the climate, you know, for us to carry through some of this reduced travel as things at some point get back to normal.
Well, I think we, you know, Greg and I certainly appreciate that, and Matteo as well. I did, you know, 2019, I did 33 countries. This year I've done 3, you know, so big change. But Greg, how's it been for you? I mean, you know, being the voice and the MC of Finovate, and with all the events that you've had around the world, how's it been adapting the virtual world for you guys?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's been a pretty dramatic shift, right? I think one of the things that has always made Finovate really cool is getting together, just bringing intelligent, interesting people and putting them all in a room, filling them full of caffeine, and then later on a drink or two, and kind of letting them bounce off of each other. And obviously, that's no longer an option. So we've really had to put a lot of work into figuring out alternatives, just like I think, you know, a lot of people have in 2020. But you know, the digital conferences, I think, are a really interesting animal, because you know, there is a lot of impetus now, people who don't want to travel as much as they have before. You get kind of a taste of being able to stay at home. And, you know, if you actually enjoy your kids, enjoy your family, then, you know, being at home is nice. And so what we're trying to figure out is how we keep some of these pieces, which we've discovered in 2020, some of these, you know, abilities that we've implemented to let people come to conferences virtually, how we can keep that and stack it on top of an in-person experience in 2021. We do expect to get back to in-person events. We're planning on Finovate Fall next year kind of being our, you know, big return to in-person events. But even for that one, we recognize there's going to be people who either aren't able to travel or who aren't comfortable traveling. So for us, it's been a really interesting growth journey. You know, we sort of were forced to make these switches, forced to look at all these tools, which we might not otherwise have done. And now that we've done that, we have a number of people who really enjoy them. So I think that's kind of the story of 2021 in a nutshell, to some extent. We've all been sort of forced to do things which have really shifted us outside of our comfort zones, outside of what we might normally do. And now you just have to sort of say, okay, well, we've done this. What's worth keeping? You know, as we get back to quote unquote normal, what processes do we actually want to continue to adjust? And I think that's where we're certainly, you know, just like everybody else, we're kind of figuring it out one day at a time. I will say, just for the record, 2021 would be a great year to support Finovate. If you haven't been in a little while, we could absolutely use you coming back. I'm not ashamed to say, you know, the in-person events industry obviously has been really heavily impacted by this. And so if, you know, you feel that Finovate has done something valuable for you at some point in the past, this would be a great time to come out, help us make that fall event a really big one, or check out some of our digital offerings and see if you like it. But, you know, it's, I'm glad we've made it. I think we've had some really fun digital events, and I, you know, can't wait for that opportunity to get back up on a real stage and actually see everybody that I'm talking to, because you miss it, right? You miss that feeling.
I miss the camaraderie and the networking and the coffees, you know, all those things you mentioned. It's tough. Well, I'll definitely try and get to it, Finovate. Hey, Matteo, you've done a bit of travel though through Europe, at, you know, over the last few months. But you know, has your schedule been impacted by this?
So in 2018, I was very proud to, you know, the January 1st, you got this sort of a vouch for the year of like taking less than 10 flights per month. And I was like super happy that I managed to do this in 2019. And then 2020 has been a year where basically, you know, I'm lucky enough to be able to have three beautiful locations that I move around with, like my parents in Italy, front, you know, beachfront, you know, the mountains where the kid lives, and Estoril, which is my like primary residence, you know, like ocean, Mediterranean, and French Alps, which are basically being the three cocoons, you know.
Hey, we're all both getting the jealous, business man. And
yeah,
I'm not really, the business on, and. No, it's which I've been.
Yeah, like, it sounds really tough, Matteo.
No, it isn't actually. It's been a super interesting year in the sense that, you know, business went like a ballistic in a wrong way, because in Portugal I'm doing real estate, and real estate, you know, I don't need to tell you how heavily it was impacted. Fintech stage, you know, the events part sucked, but we got a good like sort of. Consulting deal flow, which made us like pivoting almost into more innovation program, you know, building deal flow for funds and finding the perfect startup for a bank or an insurance to work with. And the fintech stage, the event part got shrunk a lot. But actually what I'm really proud of is that if you, Brett, would have told me that we would be able to put 52, a bit more, actually, Breaking Banks Europe show in a year, last year, given how we started. Wow. Not because it was, you know, for me, it was completely new. I mean, I'm not super proud to say that I haven't listened to a single podcast before I build my own one, because I'm just not the guy. I don't even listen to music, you know. I'm not that type of guy. I either watch Netflix or two sports that I, you know, there is usually there is, I like quietness. But Breaking Banks Europe has been a super interesting, you know, journey of content. And personally, it allowed me to like, or to us, all of us, all the hosts, to get back in touch with, you know, almost like a testing in a good way, the relationships, right? Because I realized there are plenty of people that over the last 10 to 15 years were like very close to the Swift world, to the InnoTribe, then the investment, and then, you know, the startups, and, you know, and the usual suspects like the Jim Maruz guys. And, you know, all of them responded super positively. And thank also to Renato that is actually recording the show that like kept us all, at least the Breaking Banks Europe part, sort of aligned. It was amazing. Actually, the podcast it has been the highlight learning experience of 2020 for me. And lastly, which is like very personal, I turned 50 in 2020. Okay, and I swear to God,
you don't look a day over 49, man.
So wait, I hate to celebrate my birthday. Really, I never did it. I didn't celebrate my 40. So I was saying, okay, guys, I really have to do something for my 50s. And then COVID came, and all my like, you know, friends from class, we are all turning 50 this year, you know, and nobody could celebrate it. So I kind of said, that's interesting. You know, that's one thing less to worry for me this year. So it's a special year on, you know, all aspects.
Matteo, I just turned 50 last month, so I feel you. I have to say my COVID birthday was way better than I expected, because like everyone turns it on a little bit more because they don't want you to feel bad. So it was pretty good. But, you know, in a funny way, this turned out to be a fantastic year to launch a podcast. I mean, Emerge Everywhere just launched in September. And more people are listening to podcasts. They have time on their hands. But also, you know, the podcast is ostensibly about the fact that everything is interconnected and that we have to be able to see those interconnections if we want to really effectively serve people. And I can't think of a better example of the interconnectivity of everything than COVID. you know, a health crisis, an economic crisis, a racial reckoning, an incredibly divisive election and environment. And every single one of those strands is connected to the others. And if we're going to solve any one of those, we have to solve the others. So it turned out to be, in a way, a great backdrop for the conversations that I was hoping to have.
Absolutely. What's video call fever, Matteo? What do you mean with that?
So, you know, I've been working remotely, you know, for the best part of the past 7 years. So technically, which like many of us, right, beside traveling, you know, most of my meetings were like not in any office. You know, I work from home forever. I mean, as long as I can remember. But now the tricky part of it is that people feels compelled to actually do video call, even for calls that previously were only audio. So for me, it truly sucked because, I mean, I was totally, you know, comfort, sport clothes or whatever, or less, getting tanned in my terrace. And all of a sudden, I am often the only one that is only on a video one because, hey, guys, I'm sorry, but I've been working like this for 7 years. I'm not going to, like, put a T-shirt right now and get inside just because you guys are, like, a COVID-expecting, you know, video calls. You know, you just keep be content with the voice only. Am I the only one feeling like this?
I don't think,
man,
so.
I feel you 100%. I've been a home worker for a really long time, and all of a sudden all these noobs come into the game, and they don't know what they're doing. These people who have no experience working from home, like, you guys, I'm going to turn on the video. You're like, no,
can
man.
You hear me? Can you hear
leave
me?
That, yeah. Yeah. Leave the video off.
You're on mute. You're on mute. Yeah.
I need to go and, like, do the dishes while I'm on this call, or I need to, you know, if you're a home worker, you always got to be multitasking. Jason, you know what I'm talking about. I've got two small kids at home too. You always got to be doing something. I got to be folding the laundry. I got to be picking up the breakfast dishes, and people turn on the video and I'm just sitting there. Watch it. Right. Yeah. I'm like, come on, guys. You guys are ruining this for everybody. Don't you understand the gift you've all just been given? Shameful.
So I will say, as someone who did not work from home beforehand and who went into an office every day, because that's what lawyers do. We go into our office every day, and had a staff. I at the beginning, I was one of those a-holes that you were talking about, Greg. I wanted to see my staff. I needed to see them face to face. And I actually think from a client perspective, lawyers never did video calls with their clients before. Like, that was not really part of the routine. But the change in habits, my clients wanting to, like, see my face and interacting with me, and, like, that whole cultural shift, for me, in terms of a lawyer-client relationship, that was really valuable. I actually started getting more FaceTime with my clients than, frankly, I did before, pre-COVID, and it was meaningful in a lot of ways. It was meaningful to them, it was meaningful to me, and I think it's meaningful for, you know, staff as well. Wasn't every day. I'm not like a not like a crazy person, but once a week, it was nice to see people's faces.
And I mean, picking up on that, our banks historically love being able to get together to work on things, which is all well and good. But when you're, you know, coordinating a consortium of over 40 banks, the time to actually get together really slowed things down. But boom, they suddenly all discover, you know, Zoom and Microsoft Teams and the electronic tools we use, like Stormboard. And the pace with which the banks and the, I'd say the banking industry has been able to maneuver now, you know, partially because they're using new tools, also because, you know, things like PPP needing to go out and customers not able to come into branches, I think overall has been a good thing for the industry in terms of the pace in their adoption of those tools. I don't know, JP, do you feel
forced,
the same
forced
way?
Adaptation, I guess, you know. So, JP, how do you feel as a business we've had to adapt? And
well, yeah, I mean, first of all, let me just say, it's interesting to talk about these different experiences, because after a 25-year corporate career, going to an office every day, I had been working from home for the past 7 years. 1 year ago, in December of 2019, I decided, you know what, it'll be good to get out of the house every day. And I took a spot at a local WeWork, took a bus a few miles to downtown Bellevue, the suburb here on the east side of Seattle, went to an office and I was loving it. And then that lasted about 2 months. And by the end of February, decided this is probably not a good idea to be traveling and going in there. But to build on Jason's point, I do think this has forced some people over the Rubicon in a good way. And my last trip was in February. I was with a bank doing a 2 days times 7 hour on-site workshop with a board and senior leadership team around how they build an innovation capacity and how do they actually start to take those big projects and break them down into small steps. And so this forced us to flip it around and do 7 2-hour segments that we do virtually with some of those digital tools that Jason was talking about. So that's been, really good for the work that I've been doing. And we're busier than ever. We've got all kinds of people there now. And actually, when we think about it, it's a lot easier for them to set aside 2-hour chunks than it is 7-hour days. And so it's caused us to rethink that. And then on the Provoke side, I think it's been good just the way that the whole team has kind of filled out. So not only all of the folks that are here today, the on-air talent, but what maybe the average listener doesn't see is the work behind the scenes that Cassidy LeBlanc, our executive producer, and Kevin Hirshhorn, our audio engineer and editor, have really done to make the process just so much better and easier for everybody. We've been putting out the Breaking Banks podcast every week for, seven and a half years.
Yeah.
And now, with 4 regular shows and plus special episodes, and so we've got a couple new shows that are going to be coming online next year too. It's been good that we kind of had this ability without Brett, you and Jason and I all on different airplanes in different cities at different times to really be able to focus and build the infrastructure so we could keep creating the content for our listeners. And at the end of the day, I mean, that was a silver lining in what's been a very, very dark cloud for, the whole world, really.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, let's take a quick break. Then after the break, I think maybe we ask our producers to say hello. What do you think, guys?
Yeah, let's do it.
Do it.
All right. All right. You're listening to, let me get this right, Breaking Banks, Breaking Banks Europe, Finovate Podcast, Tech on Reg, and Emerge Everywhere, live right now, recording, from all around the globe. We'll be right back after this break.
Banking Circle's proprietary technology enables payments businesses and banks of any scale to seize opportunities, compete, and grow. From multi-currency accounts to fast access to lending services, international payments and local clearing to real-time FX, Banking Circle solutions are quick, low-cost, and secure. Bypass legacy systems and enable global banking services for your clients. Banking Circle, the financial infrastructure provider you can bank on. Find out more at bankingcircle.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
And now, here's more Breaking Banks.
Well, welcome back to Breaking Banks, along with Breaking Banks Europe, the Tech on Reg podcast, Emerge Everywhere, and the Finovate podcast. I'm JP Nichols, and the whole team is here. We wanted to get our behind-the-scenes team on the air with us after break, and they were adamant that said, no, their job is behind the scenes, and they're going to stay behind the scenes.
My bad.
Yeah, no, it was a great idea, and they're a great team. And but let's talk about
the unsung heroes.
They are. They're the folks that really make this happen every week. But let's talk about some of the things that are happening in the industry. Jason brought up a little bit about how some of the banks are adapting and the technology that they're seeing. Greg, what have you seen at Finovate in terms of maybe technology trends or changes since the pandemic?
Sure. Well, I think the first thing that really struck me, you know, back in March and April, I started talking to a lot of Finibate alums, just asking, you know, what the situation was like for them. And so many of them were insanely busy, you know, much, much busier than they'd ever been at any point in their company's history. And the reason for that was there's this mad scramble, right, for banks to try and adopt technology or implement new technologies. And, you know, certain companies, I think, really reaped the rewards of that, and companies who had done some strong work in 2018, 2019 to put themselves in the position to be able to do that. And I think what we saw was all of a sudden there was, you know, a series of really acute pain points that banks were struggling to deal with right away, and companies were able to jump in with solutions, were going gangbusters there. On the flip side, there was this really big line that started to emerge between banks that had spent some time looking at digital adoption and getting ready for, you know, this type of problem. Of course, they didn't know that's what they were planning for. But this really big line emerged between companies who had done some work and companies that hadn't. And so we saw this scramble, right? And I think you see that on the Finibate stage, because all of a sudden there are a huge number of plays coming our way. And I say stage, you know, virtual stage, obviously, for this year. But companies were coming our way looking around how we educate customers on what technology is available to them, how we educate staff of banks and what technology is available to them so they can help customers out, looking at how you can engage digitally, provide customer support digitally, all of these things. And then central to this, I think, was this question of core banking and a lot of things, you know, limitations that had existed on the core really kind of came to the forefront. And so we saw a lot of core providers, either people looking to come up with alternative core or core workaround solutions. So, you know, from our standpoint, we saw this kind of massive leap. Yeah, this like massive leap forward in terms of the digital adoption, what banks were willing to do, which I think is really interesting. And, you know, to my point earlier, I think hopefully we can keep that. Hopefully we can keep that mentality and this idea that, you know, you have to be able to innovate, adopt new solutions. And you know, JP, I've heard you on Finibate stage multiple times talking about the importance of making sure you're resilient, that you're able to survive this type of thing. Well, this was the test, right? We saw this was the test, and a lot of people passed with flying colors, and a lot of them didn't. So from our standpoint, I think that's been one of the biggest things about 2020, and it's this kind of positive side, negative side, but I love what it's done to the industry, just creating this impetus, and I hope we can keep that momentum.
Well, and part of what drives that resilience is not just the tech stack that you have, but it's the people and the culture and the way that you operate in that. And people have been really impacted hard by the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Jen, I know that you're seeing that with, you know, the banks that you work with and some of the things that they're doing for their customers and even what some of the companies are doing for their employees. What kind of impacts are you seeing?
So, you know, we all read the papers and we know just how financially challenged people are during this time, especially since the government stimulus has long been over and another one does not look like it's in sight. So, you know, I think in general, credits have performed far better than anyone would have expected, in large part because of that stimulus. And so, while I agree with Greg that there's been a lot of great nimbleness and workarounds that have enabled companies to get things done more quickly and to act with some sense of urgency, in a way, the banks haven't had it as bad as they might have. And it's not over yet. Let's be clear about that. So I think these next few months are going to be really important on that front. But I think in some ways, the more interesting development this year has been the way in which employers, and not just banks, all of the folks I interviewed from across sectors were really facing this issue around how do they support their employees. And this comes, you know, in the context of, you know, a few months before the pandemic, the Business Roundtable issuing a new statement of the purpose of the corporation, essentially rejecting the ideas of Milton Friedman and that the only stakeholder who matters is your shareholder. So back to this idea that all of your stakeholders matter, including your customers, your employees, the community in which you operate, et cetera. And so companies have had to really walk the talk, if you will. And as Greg said, some have walked that talk better than others. But in the beginning of the pandemic in particular, remember, we saw companies offering hazard pay, particularly the frontline workers, or in the case of banks, folks who had to actually had to still come to the branch. They started offering all kinds of daycare subsidies because people were working from home and their daycare wasn't open. They started offering paid sick leave. And we've seen a lot of companies pull back from all of that. In fact, there was a headline in today's Banker that said, don't expect another round of hazard pay as the pandemic continues. I think that's problematic. And I think that in the new Biden administration in particular, there's going to be some broader public policy discussion about the role of employers and like, should paid sick leave be optional or shouldn't we make that available to everybody? But I think
we
on
have
the
to
whole,
re-examine capitalism itself. Really.
Exactly. But I think overall banks have done a good job of looking out for their employees in incredible circumstances. And I think the last thing I want to say, and I'd love to hear others talk about this, is I have been blown away with the speed at which companies of all kinds have been able to relocate their call center employees home. And that's not just literally the logistics of moving them home and making sure they're set up, et cetera. There's all kinds of legal, regulatory, risk kinds of factors. And that is, if there's anything that has super impressed me about what companies have done there, it's that.
So, Jen, it's so funny that you mentioned that. I work for a lot of companies in the receivables management space. So most of the calls that I was getting in March were companies trying to figure out how to do their little dance with the myriad of state regulators who were trying to relocate call center employees. And that brought about a few different issues, right? It was every single state had a completely different regulatory structure for whether or not, you know, like if you're a collection agency, if you had to be registered with the state. And then literally there were some states requiring every single call center agent to register their home address with the state. Mm-hmm. That brought about privacy concerns or cybersecurity concerns. It was just insanity. But it brought about a really important issue. And one of the digital transformation changes that I think we really saw in March and April were the manner in which organizations, particularly FinServe organizations, how they were communicating with their customers and consumers generally, because by the way, that includes their employees. So now we have a situation where everyone's everywhere, even though the regulations say that they're not supposed to be. And the financial service institutions couldn't handle the call volume, right? So all of a sudden, we have companies like Abe AI, right, who are training algorithms for chatbots, trying to come up with what we're going to train the algorithm to respond to all of these COVID-related questions that these financial, you know, services institutions are getting, because none of that training had taken place on those algorithms before. You've got companies like Interactions out of Boston who are training voice-powered AI to handle inbound coming calls because there are physically like not enough call agents to take all the calls from the consumers. And the websites, you know, of these financial services, they could help a little bit, but they weren't built for that type of self-service that every single consumer on the planet all of a sudden needed all at once immediately. So it was just like this ridiculous conflagration of events that really required, I think, everyone stepping up to the plate and working together all at the same time. You had cybersecurity companies, you had the financial services organizations, and you had all the entire fintech community in whatever lane that they operate in, whether you're, you know, an AI company or some other support system, like everyone dropped what they were doing and were like, we need to get our shit together. And they did in very, very large part.
Yeah. So how do you guys think this is COVID? Let's get a little bit more, big picture here. how do you think COVID will change us from a societal perspective? These behaviors that we've observed, the adaptations we've had to make during the year, you know, what of that's going to stick? And what of the old ways of doing things and the old ways of us thinking are going to be challenged moving forward? You know, Jen, taking your cue, I think this really, whether you're in the US or the UK or on the African continent or in ASEAN, you know, the clear differences in quality of life that people have had at the bottom end of the spectrum, the lower to middle income households, the inequality that's been so clearly rampant during COVID, how COVID has affected poorer neighborhoods in multiple geographies, much worse from a healthcare perspective, from an education of their children perspective, you know, digital inclusion, access to education for the kids because they don't have Wi-Fi or a tablet, you know, all of these sorts of issues. What of the aspects of what we've gone through change us as a species, do you think? Or is it just we're just rushing to get back to normal?
What do you guys think? I'd like to think that events of this magnitude make an impression and stick with us. But I don't know. I think back to the financial crisis and, you know, we have pretty short memories, at least in America. We have very short memories. And so I think frankly, it's too soon to say what we're too much in the middle of it to know exactly what will come out the other end. But I do think it's worth thinking about what we want to hold on to,
right,
or what we should hold on to and make it so. I think that the financial crisis, which demonstrated that the majority of Americans were struggling financially, and that's true around the globe, and that now yet another reminder of the disparate impact of COVID on people of color, on lower income people, et cetera. You could say the exact same thing about climate change, the other massive
Absolutely.
Issue of our time.
AI affecting employment.
Or AI, right, exactly. Same thing with technology. Technology is just a thing. It can be good. It can be bad. When it tends to be bad, it tends to be particularly bad for people of color and lower income people. So I'd like to think that, boy, it's all staring us in the face. How can we just go back to the way it was? But I think it's going to require concerted effort. I don't think it's just going to happen.
Jen, I think that over the next 12 months, as we sort of watch what the distribution of the vaccines look like across the planet, and then sort of measure the efficacy of all of that, I think the next 12 months are going to be massively important for people to figure that out. Because I think especially here in the US, it's like, oh, cool, miracle drug, poke my arm 2 times and like then everything's going to be fine. It's right. It isn't that simple. But as Jen pointed out, we've got short memories. And I also think the transition between the administrations, from the Trump administration to the Biden administration, the next 12 months on both of those issues, I think are going to very much dictate what we choose to keep and what we choose to forget. Because ultimately,
it's a really good point about the vaccine. Who's going to get it? When are they going to get it? It's heartening to see equity considerations involved in the prioritization. And that could make a really positive difference, but it's one of about, 25 things that we probably need to do to continue to close the gap.
So when I look at what's going to happen with the new normal, I think there are some really big blocks which are shakier than they have appeared previously that build up our industry. You know, if you look at the financial industry over the last 10 years, we sort of had the luxury of not having to care about a lot of things which affect a lot of people in lower incomes. And there's sort of this idea that, you know, the economy is going really well, everything's growing, the stock market's going gangbusters, like everything's fine. We can sort of just proceed business as usual. And we know that there are some inefficiencies out there. We know there are some people who are being left out, but we don't really need to engage with that. And I think now what we've seen is that you don't have that luxury anymore. As a financial institution, as a brand, you have to care in a way that you didn't before. You have to be aware of the social impact in a way that you maybe didn't before. And I think the other really big piece that's going to dramatically change things, and I have no idea how this is going to play out, but you've got a lot of people who have now had a taste of financial technology, in many cases for the first time. They've seen something that is, you know, that they maybe been hesitant to engage with. They were maybe scared of doing more banking online or more through the mobile phone. And now they've gotten a taste of this. And I think that it's going to be arrogant for banks to assume that because I've given you your first taste of this technology, that you're going to stay with me as a bank. Once I start to engage with technology, I start to kind of pull these threads, these big picture questions. What is a bank?
Yeah. What do I want from the bank? Exactly.
Right. What services am I actually getting? Can I, you know, and am I getting them in the best, most efficient way? I think there's going to be two really huge customer crises that are going to happen in the next little bit as people look and say, is my financial institution giving me what I need because I'm more aware of more options than it was before? And does my financial institution care about me? Do they care about me as an individual? Do they care about other people around the world? And if the answer to that question is no, it's never been easier to jump ship. So I think we're in this really crucial moment where banks in particular have to justify themselves a little bit more than they have previously, where the technology enables customers to do things that they hadn't done previously. And there's going to be this kind of freedom of choice. What's going to happen from a customer standpoint is going to be fascinating to watch. I mean, I've rethought my own banking relationships, my own financial relationships. Yeah. I would imagine most of you guys have too. And companies that aren't doing what I consider to be a good job socially or a good job addressing me as a person, you're out. Why would I stay? I have so many other options. And I think there's going to be a lot of people who are in that same kind of boat.
Yeah, I want to get Matteo to your European and a bit of African perspective here. But I think, Greg, that's so critical. I mean, think about how tone deaf it is in this environment to be offering people credit card reward programs with cashback and airline miles for increasing their spending in the midst of COVID. It's so poorly aligned with our needs from our banks right now. You know, yes. The number one thing you should be doing is helping me save money. And if you can't do that, I've got to start looking at this technology and so forth. Here ends the rant. But Matteo, what about from a European perspective? Europe is right now in the midst of another increase in COVID cases. We're seeing that, of course, in the US right now. But, how do you think Europe has learned from this?
So it's funny you mentioned the cashback, because there is this in every country, Europe has been dealing with it slightly differently, but Italy is a good example. There is this app that allows you, it's called Immune, that allows you to like figure out who you have been in touch with.
The contact tracing app.
Yep. The virus. Exactly. Which of course raised a huge debate about privacy, the state is getting into our lives, et cetera, et cetera. And then all of a sudden they do a cashback app where everyone could get $150 euros, back with 10 purchases on their credit cards. And the speed at downloading that app was 100 times faster than
the contact tracing app.
So that
might
is,
do it, for pizza.
Yeah, exactly. So talking about some of the absurdity, the dynamics that this has been triggered, and another maybe like a good like data point, the badly hit part of the business were like the very small. The very small to small SMEs, okay? Because the ones that were able to still pay your salary, even claim, hey, we won't fire anyone in the next 6 months, they're clearly, helped a lot by the government. And even like the 1 to 10 million, the US or euros size companies, they got some help, but the smallest size of the companies, they are left. And I experienced, as I said, at least three countries constantly. People are getting hungry. So in Milan, there is this association that gives food. It's called the your everyday bread, you know, from the Christian give us our daily bread, you know, Jesus.
Sure.
And there were 2 kilometers of line but there were not extra communitarian people of color coming in. There were white people from Milan with their kids and babies asking for one food per day. We're talking about 2 kilometers of line for one meal. So people are getting hungry. And in Africa, it's kind of the same thing, because on the top of it, and I could give you a couple of examples. So in Uganda, the government paralyzed the country. So lucky us, COVID didn't hit that much, but because the measures were completely drastic. Now, drastic measure equal economy completely paralyzed. And who are the victims again? Well, the smallest business. What I wanted to add about what is going to stick and what is going to change, as you know, I keep investing in companies, and now the focus is on Africa. I could not imagine to actually make an investment deal without ever meet the entrepreneurs, but I think it is happening. I mean, I can see it happening. And if I can make a little announcement for next year, as of January 1st, I'm joining Bamboo Capital Partners, who is raising a $500 million Sustainable Development Goals Fund, which is an umbrella fund of 6 different funds. One of them is $100 million on Africa, seed and series A. I'm one of the two partners of it. Super excited because that keeps alive my love story with Africa and my passion for impact investing. And that's also, is a good thermometer of the type of habits that will stick. I think that people is realizing that we were losing an enormous amount of time before. And the ones that are socially conscious and sort of climate change conscious, which are a lot more. We have a carbon. We're registering the first show of Breaking Banks Europe is a carbon show. Is breaking carbon, actually, first week of January. Yeah, because we are start talking about it. And this is something that before it was only at the scientific level. Is getting into the everyday talks. So that also will be an important factor for habit change.
Look, I think that whole social movement connected with this. If you talk about the food lines, and we've seen them in Texas and the US, big lines, hours long, people queuing up for 7 hours to get meals and so forth. But we have the capacity to feed everybody. During COVID, one of the big problems was food wastage, because people were hoarding food. Because they were afraid that the supermarkets were going to be empty. So they took extra food. They couldn't eat it, and they ended up throwing it out. I mean, that's crazy,
You're talking about the video of the guy who was just cramming every single thing in the meat aisle into the cart, got busted on social media, right?
This is not an isolated incident. Yeah, I saw the fight in Australia over the toilet paper, where two women came to fisticuffs over the last pack of toilet paper, which is just insane. I mean, I understand toilet paper. I get it, right? But we have the resources. The US is the richest economy the planet has ever seen. The billionaires in the US accumulated $1 trillion worth of more net worth during this year, and we've got people queuing up for hours in food lines. Isn't this something we have in our power to fix? why is it like this? These are some of the questions I think we've got to ask after this, you know? I mean, you know, it's a big challenge to change the nature of capitalism, to have, you know, instead of, as you say, Jen, shareholder concerns, you know, when are we going to have metrics built into the economy that, are about carbon neutralization as the economy, about ensuring, equality is geared into the economy. That's a key element. How can we build other metrics into the economy beyond just pure free market capitalism? Because it hasn't worked, you know. I mean, if you argue capitalism is it, I know I'm going on a rant right now, but, you know, we wouldn't have pollution if we had different, metrics, if fossil fuel companies had their feet held to the fire, right, Jason?
Well, and Brett, this is where I hope fintech, you know, really goes, because I'm sick of seeing the next challenger and neobank that is the prettier interface or tailored to, you know, this micro demographic. You know, we need to get deeper into the stack of the things that technology and embedded finance can actually go change. I think that's hopefully the real opportunity in the breaking free, that if we're going to move in a new direction, you know, let's go that way rather than, you know, the next challenger bank, the new way of getting, you know, deeper in debt faster. You know, how do we actually use technology and fintech to change some of these social pressures?
Yeah.
So, Jason, I agree with that. And I think it's going to be really interesting, this embedded finance trend, to see whether the big egos in fintech can handle not being at the center of the universe. Because at the end of the day, yeah, that is about being part of someone else's thing. And there are ways to make money doing that, but that's going to largely be B2B and heavy on tech. And I think there are huge opportunities there.
Yeah.
But it's going to require folks to get out of their own way when fintech has been such a name and headlights kind of thing. So it'll be interesting to see if the industry can make that cultural shift.
A maturation. Dara?
I also think that our regulators around the world have a role to play here. And
amen.
Different regulators in different parts of the world who oversee different things have, I think, unfortunately, become just political pawns, right? So the roles that they play and the jobs that they do and the direction that they're under become so sort of like, in my view, and like I'm not a shy person, like grossly intertwined with the politics of the parties that are in charge, that they forget that they have a job to do. And that job needs to be done consistently. So many of the things that we're talking about, the regulators have a role in that. The SEC has a role in that. The CFPB has a role in that. You know, all of these regulators who are tasked with protecting those individual consumers who are standing in 7-hour long food lines, who are in like crushing debt, who are on and underbanked. I mean, there is a role to be played, and you can't do that if you don't understand the master that you're serving. And that master shouldn't be the political party in power. That master should be the constituents that you swore an oath to serve.
Amen, sister.
Now I'm off my soapbox, Brett.
Amen.
Well, you know, I think we're all going to have to climb off the soapbox here shortly. But Brett, you talk a lot about first principles in design. And I think listening to what all of you have just said, a lot of this boils down to kind of assuming that the current infrastructure is correct. And so right, that any changes or regulations or new apps or whatever just kind of conform to the system instead of kind of stepping back and trying to understand what are we actually trying to accomplish and how can we do the greatest amount of good. And you know, one of the things that I'm happy about when I look back on 2020 is that we did address a lot of these things. Jenna, every episode of your podcast, I think has addressed a lot of these issues. Jason, your episode in July on the Black Banker, the real color of money. I think we really started to dig beyond the technology this year, and I'm looking forward to what we're going to do next year. So maybe maybe as we wrap this up, I would love to hear from everybody on any thoughts or plans that you have on addressing some of these things on your show in 2021.
Well, I'll go first. I'm really making it my mission to try to bring a guest who can make the link between climate change and financial health. I think we all have to be talking about climate change, as Matteo said earlier, and I'm going to try to do my part.
So for Tech on Reg, we're going to be really focused on privacy, the rising role of telemedicine in our lives, and what the new Biden administration is going to mean, is really going to mean for consumer protection.
I want to work on the Martian economy.
Brett's dead. No,
seriously. Seriously.
Because
it gives us a chance to redesign the way an economy should work from the ground up, and that can be an object lesson for the rest of us, I think. Is that crazy? I don't know.
Brett's right. Next series, Breaking Earth. He's been with Breaking Gang for Breaking Earth. Yeah, you know, as I've been thinking about what I want to be focused on for 2021, I want to put a real emphasis on finding not just the startups, but bigger institutions that are really rebuilding the social contract in terms of finding business models and building out applications that are good for their users and good for them, that it's a holistic level of sustainability.
Absolutely. Greg?
So, I mean, from our standpoint, obviously a lot of what we'll cover will be dependent on what we see at Finovate and who ends up winning best of show. But I'm actually really excited to see what 2021 gives us as far as innovative companies coming to do their demos, who our audience picks as best of show at the events. I think that'll be really fascinating to watch unfold. I think beyond that, it's going to be a focus on people who really understand that the customer is at the center of the equation, that the decisions that we make in this industry have real world implications for people outside of our bubble. And I think, I'll always look for people who are trying to challenge some of these big building blocks, pulling at some big picture threads, because we are at a point now where it's time to make some large scale adjustments. You know, the name of this show is Breaking Banks, and it's been 7 years it's been going on. You kind of forget what that really means, but maybe it's time at this point to really break banks. And obviously there's multiple ways that you can talk Amen. About that, but it's something that, it's been too long that the system has been limping along in a status quo that hasn't really worked for everybody. And now I think it's shattered. I think it's time to move past that. And I think there will be big picture changes. And from my standpoint, I'll just look to try and highlight those and bring people to the forefront whenever they come on either our stage at Finovate, they come on the podcast, whatever the case may be. We're a platform first and foremost.
Let's hold their feet to the fire.
Good ideas. Yeah. So let's see. Challenge issued. Let's see what you've got for 2021. And big picture ideas are certainly welcome, probably required, I think, at this point.
Matteo.
On Breaking Banks Europe, echoing what Jennifer was saying, the more about Breaking Impact, which is one of our most followed sort of format, as well as, we take ecosystems and we zoom in. And that was something that gave the opportunity to a lot of local entrepreneurs and investors and players to give visibility to different type of ecosystems. And we see that our auditors sort of rewarded a lot. And I want to make another announcement, though it is, I want to say 97% likely we're going to launch Breaking Banks Africa next year. We have a good couple of dozens of episodes already in production. We just need to fix in the last details, but it's going to be super interesting. 54 countries, a dozen of fintech associations already in the continent. So yeah, I think I will have the honor. I'll have the honor to wrap up this family episode, putting together Breaking Banks Europe, Tech on Reg, Finovate, and Emerge Everywhere. Thank you, Brad, Dara, Greg, Jason, Jennifer, and JP. Happy New Year, and have a great holidays break. With some of you, we're going to talk again, of course, but with most of you, see you next year, and thank you.
Grazie, ciao.
And it's a wrap.
That's it for this week. If you like the show, make sure to give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform, or share it with a friend, or share it on social media.
You can listen to all of our more than 300 episodes, plus all of the other shows from Provoke.fm Media, and learn more about being a guest, a partner, or a sponsor, all at Provoke.fm.
We'll see you again next week with more Breaking Banks.